I'm Madeline Walter.
And I'm Ben Axelrad, and we're both hypochondriacs.
I think I'm sick when I'm not.
And anytime I'm sick, I think I'm a goner for sure.
Welcome to Definitely Dying, the podcast about health concerns, both real and imagined.
Because it's better to laugh about it together than cry about it alone.
I have a runny nose and an ingrown hair, and
my knee hurts.
My arms are kind of rash.
Is that a rash?
And I had Asian food, and that makes me feel kind of sick. I might be lactose intolerant.
Guys, hello and welcome back to another Definitely Dying. We're so excited you're still listening to this podcast. It really means a lot. How are you, Ben? How's it been going?
It was a bit of an ordeal this week. We ordered t-shirts.
We did a
live show at the comedy theater where we actually record our podcast, and We had this great idea to order t-shirts for them and to pay a lot of extra money to guarantee that they arrived on time. and that didn't work. That didn't work even a little bit.
So then the t-shirts arrived yesterday?
Yeah, the t-shirts have finally arrived.
Which was a full week and 3 days. Almost 2 weeks after they were initially supposed to arrive.
Yeah, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, it was a solid 10 days after the fact, after we needed the t-shirts. So our very brand was embarrassed.
Yeah.
We lost a lot of business.
We promised t-shirts. We gave people fun different prizes instead of t-shirts.
Yep. But we lost our corporate sponsorship. There was a talking to.
Yeah.
We were on the receiving end of it.
Yeah, we're really on thin ice now because of these t-shirts. Things are really hanging on by a thread in the Definitely Dying sphere.
Yeah, honestly, we'll be lucky to survive the week.
Yep.
But if we do, hey, who wants to win a t-shirt? Because, we had these t-shirts we were going to give away at the live show, and we really wanted to, but we still have them.
We still got a box full of t-shirts, and they're nice.
They're pretty cool t-shirts.
I'm going to touch one right now.
Yeah.
They're, like, not those, like, gross, like, sort of, like, convention t-shirts.
Yeah, yeah.
They're, like, part of why I took so long was insisted that we order them from like a nice place.
Yeah, yeah. They're not free giveaway type t-shirts.
No, they're nice. They're like sort of, they're not American Apparel because we not creeps, but they're like sort of American Apparel style. You know, they're soft and like, they have our logo on them, which as soon as our awesome friend Roxy made the logo, check out her stuff, roxymakesthings.com. I was like, that'll look cool on a t-shirt.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that finally is true.
And it does.
It really looks cool.
We'll throw some pictures on the Instagram.
Oh yeah.
And so what did we land on, Madeline? How are we gonna help people to wear our clothes?
Yeah, so here's how you can get your hands on one of these sweet tees. Tweet at us or message us on Facebook or post on our Facebook wall. Heck, you could even email us at definitelydying@gmail.com with the reason that you think you are definitely dying.
Yeah.
It could be something you're experiencing right now. It could be a killer hypochondriac story that happened to you in the past. But just wow us with your fear and anxiety.
Yeah.
Tell us your best definitely dying story. And then by next week, you got a week to do it, and whoever has the best definitely dying story, we will share your story on the air if you want. If you'd like to keep it private, that's fine, but this is probably not the medium for you. We'll send you one of these sweet definitely dying tees, and I promise you, you'll love it.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, did we clarify that there's going to be a winner? Cool.
Yeah, yeah. So send us your best definitely dying story, and we will pick the most dire situation, the one that strikes the most fear in our tender little hearts, and at least you'll get a t-shirt out of it.
Yeah, hopefully you don't die before you get the t-shirt.
Yeah.
But if you are, you'll be buried in it.
That's a legal stipulation.
Yeah.
So if you want to get buried in our tea, send us your definitely dying story.
Hashtag buried in our tea.
Hashtag buried in our tea. Should we just get started?
Yeah, let's do it.
Awesome.
Guys, we have just a great guest for you. We're so excited to have her here. She's a veteran of the UCB stage. You've seen her on the Herald Team Rococo and the Maud Team Bonafide alongside our own Madeline Walter, the Bonafide part at least. You've seen her videos on Funny or Die with her partner Wilder Smith under the moniker Leland and Milder.
Leland and Milder.
Under the moniker
Leland.
That's the porn version. It's not sexual at all, but it's different.
Yeah. It's different. Yeah. Leland and Wilder. I meant Leland and Wilder. Look for them on Funny or Die for their hilarious videos. And starting this spring, we think in March, we're not 100% certain, you can see her in the Disney Channel original series Andy Mack, one of the co-stars. And just last year, you could have seen her on in I Am Watching You, a sexy thriller in which she plays a less sexy part. She tells us, at least.
Not a non-sexy part.
Not
a sexy part.
Yeah.
What made it? So it's just in the middle of sexy and non-sexy?
Well, yeah. I mean, so this is a Lifetime original.
Yeah. Lifetime original.
And it's a sexy movie. Like, it's sexy and it's dangerous.
Ooh.
But, like, the part I play is not the sexy part of it.
Gotcha.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Gotcha.
It's not like, I don't think I bring down the sex appeal.
You're not like, but I'm not. I want to be part of the sex movie.
I don't see what's wrong with that. It seems very sexy.
Pretty sexy. Anyway.
And that's exactly a line of dialogue about the movie I'm in. It's very meta.
Yeah, yeah. I want to be part of the sex movie.
You really want characters when they're entering a movie to announce that it's
they
a movie.
Are in a movie.
All right, guys, that's it. I haven't finished this introduction.
Oops, oh, my God. I'm sorry.
You should be sorry. Leland Bowden. Madeline, you do this to me constantly.
I know. I'm really a bad interrupter. No, I know. I'm aware of it. Ben was literally making a zip your lips motion across the table.
Yeah. It was.
And I didn't stop.
And she didn't.
So, Leland, we like to get things rolling with just a breezy little question.
Oh, sure. Breeze away.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how much do you think about death?
I would say I think about, so on a 1 to 10, like, so if I said 8, that means I'm thinking about death 80% of the time?
Maybe.
It's interesting. We've never, like, quantified
never really broken it down.
Yeah,
because I think I might think about death more than the average person. No way to really know.
Yeah.
But I don't, it doesn't consume me. Because I don't like it to.
If it's helpful to put it in
a percentage. What percent?
Well,
I'd say less than 10%. I'm thinking about, but I think that's a large percentage. I don't think that, because think of, so 10% of your waking hours, which would be 12 hours.
Yep.
So 10%.
Well, you're not awake very much of the day.
I did the math. I did
so like 16,
the very
maybe?
Very simple math wrong. 16 hours. Okay, so, like, so 10% of 16 hours is how many minutes?
So like one. So we're talking like about 100 minutes a day spent on. Death. Yeah,
that's a solid feature film length.
Yeah.
That's a lot of minutes to spend thinking about death.
Yeah,
it's
a lot.
And does that feel accurate?
Actually, now that I've put in a percentage, 100 minutes thinking about death is a lot.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I would say. So if I did 5%, how many minutes does that
five,
take me?
Five
down?
A day would be 1/20 of the 100.
I've checked out. I hate doing math in my head.
Yeah, this is hard.
And I'm not
this is
good
too
at
hard
it.
To do. So we're saying
it was 10%. Was our other number
5%?
But before we said 10%.
Oh, 10% of
5% is just half of 10%.
Wait, is that what we said? Did we say?
We said 100 minutes, but
so
does
5
that make
minutes.
Sense?
So we're saying 100
oh,
minutes
no.
equals 10%.
Yeah.
So 5 minutes would equal
so
20%. So divided by 10%
divided by 60
holy
times
crap.
160.
This
hey, Zig, do the math. You got some? Oh, I have a calculator on my
holy
phone.
Shit.
This is the future.
Okay,
so what? So we're talking 16 hours. So
it's like 1 point. Okay, 60. So 1.6 hours would be 10% of 16 hours.
So five divided by 960. So that would be 0.005%. 5 minutes is 0.005%.
Oh, well, now we're going backwards. I didn't say five minutes. I said 5%.
Oh,
the point
is, I would say
I spend about maybe 5 minutes a day on average thinking about death, which I think
that's
a lot.
0.005% of your waking hours.
No, not necessarily. No, because you're doing the
you
math
said 5%.
Backwards. No, I said 5 minutes.
Yeah, 5 minutes
is 0.00.
Okay. 0.005% of 16 hours.
Oh God,
I know we're all
so. And this is on average, and that means some days probably maybe death doesn't occur to me. You know, I don't want to think about it. But then some days I'll spend 20 minutes thinking about death.
And when you think about death, what do those thoughts look like?
It's not like I'm solving a problem. It's just kind of like letting the feeling of knowing that everything's impermanent, really settle in. Hmm. It's chilling. It's almost like going on the same reason why you put yourself through a haunted house or like go on a roller coaster. It's like almost there's some like type of like, oh, I hate this. Okay. I'm going to do it some more.
You know,
so just kind of like having that feeling of like, wow, I don't like, it's, yeah, we're all going to die. And, it's like such a haunting, awful feeling that it's like, oh, I should probably feel this.
Yeah.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Do you think more about you or others, you think? Death-wise, not just in general.
Yeah.
Like when you're thinking to yourself, like, we're all going to die, does it feel more internal or external?
I think about myself more than other people. I hate to think about other, like, people dying because it all feels like a curse. If I think about somebody dying, it feels like I'm cursing them.
Yeah.
It feels weird. I'm like, I didn't want to think it, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So I limit those thoughts to being like, okay, that's going to be weird, you know? And also I think about how sad it might make other people because I feel pretty loved. I'm lucky to feel loved.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, oh, I gotta last it out, you know?
Yeah.
Because I don't want to traumatize anybody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, sort of both. So you're thinking about your death in regards to them.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty common.
So it's just like, no matter what, I gotta like make it, you know, as long as possible. So no one has to like deal with my passing.
Right.
That's the goal.
Yeah.
Or like while you're alive, upset people enough so that it won't bother them.
Exactly. I've thought about it too. It's just like, well, if I'm more shitty, then like that is a service that I provide. You know?
Interesting how much like Nicole Byer talked a little bit about this, like when she was on our podcast,
because
both of her parents have died.
Oh, yeah.
And they died when she was like pretty young. And just like, how much when you die, you leave so many logistics behind for other people. Like it is a pain in the ass to die.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because like, it's like all of a sudden you have like credit cards that need to be closed. Yeah. And like,
those are the things I think about. Those
really?
Those are the things I think about. I think about what I own. Like if I like had a, oh God, I hate doing this because I don't want to curse me.
Right now.
Well, let's all knock. We'll take a good knock on wood.
We're all knocking. Yeah. This will sound but like I think about like, okay, if I got like a sentence, it's like, okay, I have 3 months, you know, it's like I think about like, okay, what it goes all the way to like, what journals am I burning?
That's a big one. Like what stuff do you not want to be found is a big deal.
What like I and things like, oh, I gotta make sure all my laundry's done.
Oh, really?
I don't want anybody to do my laundry, you know? And then, like, oh, I'd have to get that legal document going. Because apparently it's really difficult, right? If you don't have someone as power of attorney, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, I have to really, like, move quickly getting legal stuff done.
Yeah.
And then I would, Like, I just think weird. It's weird. I think that's about all the logistics. I think about the logistics.
The laundry one is really fascinating to me. Like, that's one that's never crossed my mind. Like, you hear about these stories of, you know, the family coming and cleaning out the house. And, you know, like we mentioned, like, I actually did it professionally once, cleaned out someone who had recently died of cancer. This was many years back. But, yeah, we cleaned out their house. And you do find all these things. And it's sort of like I was glad I understood why they had someone professionally do it. Because if you loved this person and you found some of the things that we found, it would probably be very upsetting to you. Right. And just based on not knowing the person, we were sort of more easily able to say, like, yeah, you know, everyone's got their quirks. Like, these weren't devastating things. But if you loved this person, mm-hmm. you might feel that way. But then to think to yourself, okay, so we were cleaning this house out so that they could sell the place, right? Mm-hmm. But clothes are different. Like, it's just you wore these clothes, they're in your hamper, and you died, and you're probably not, you know, maybe you're going to give them away to charity or something, but if that's the case, you need to wash them. Maybe mm-hmm. someone else in the family is going to wear them. In that case, you need to wash them. That you do just need to do laundry for a person that's never going to wear these clothes again. In every other instance, it's seemingly for other people. But that's just like, no, like, these are this guy's clothes. Like, yeah.
I think, like, yeah. That's what I think. I was just like, oh, I don't want anybody to have to wash my bed sheets, you know? So.
Yeah. I think I would want pros to come in and just and make sure that everything was cool and then let my family come in and then just remember, sort of in the same way that like they're going to bury you in your nice suit or, you know, or a nice outfit. And I would like my family to arrive to a scene that that's been manufactured for their vision. It's like, remember Ben the way that, like, you thought he lived. Don't worry about like what it actually turned out, that, you know, he was like the the Scrabble killer or something, you know, whatever.
It gives me also like great like relief because I live pretty simply. Like, I've got one place and it's small, and I constantly am giving away stuff, and I'm constantly trying to down. And it's hard because I like to do crafts. And if you like to do crafts, you just collect all kinds of stupid things you'll never need. You know, Mod Podge, like containers and brushes. And it's like, you're only going to use a fan brush like maybe once in 3 years if you like kind of like to do crafts. I purposefully like to live small, and part of the reason is because it's just like it'll be easy if somebody else has to take care of it.
Yeah.
You know?
Have you ever had to take care of somebody's affairs after they have died?
As of now, no. Yeah. And I'm grateful, you know, like my grandparents both passed away in my home that I lived in.
Oh.
They both had a different type of cancer, and both passed peacefully in their sleep in the bedroom that they slept in.
Whoa.
2 years apart from each other.
Whoa.
But I was like, I was a kid.
Yeah.
You know, I think I was maybe 11 mm-hmm. when my granddad passed away.
Yeah.
And so it was, and there were many relatives around, so it was just like it was just being in the place where that was happening. I wasn't actively doing anything. Yeah. My best friend's father passed away, and I wasn't a part of these things, but I did get a front row seat to what it's like to, you know, have to like all of a sudden take on a ton of roles, you know, that you weren't taking on, and you know, that mental process.
Yeah.
Like, and you know, it, I think of it as like, it was like watching a movie in 3D that I wasn't in, you know, like it's like, so I didn't, like, I felt the experience without like with the privilege of not being in it, I guess.
Yeah.
That's a good analogy.
And I will say though that like a movie will change you. Like it changed me a lot.
Yeah.
And it's made me a lot more sensitive to when I hear that somebody else is dealing with it. And in a way that I don't think I was before.
Yeah.
You know, not that I was I hope I was never like a dick.
Right.
but just it's just like I forget how how permanent death is and how like it permanently changes you.
Right.
And so when somebody's dealing with a loss, it's not like, oh, okay, they deal with it for, you know, 6 months or a year and then they're done.
Yeah.
It's like, it's a constant thing,
you
know, and as somebody who isn't experiencing the loss firsthand, like when your life is going, keeps going, then you forget where everybody else is in their lives.
Yeah.
Totally.
It's like real. Yeah, it's crazy how permanent it is. And then I guess the longer you live, you just collect these different losses.
And you weave them. Yeah. Like they're woven into you, you know, and like it may not be like your identity, you know, but there's a strand that will that you have now.
Yeah.
It seems like.
Yeah.
Kind of wouldn't want it to go away permanently. Like what you kind of hope for someone who's like experienced like a death like that is just that like is that they feel it forever, but in a small way. So that like that, because that's the permanence of love, but not but that like the that like learning how to live with the agony of loss diminishes each passing day.
One would hope. Yeah. I mean, like anything, like when you're dealing with anything, there's peaks and valleys.
Sure.
And, you know. You know what I think has a lot of great, profound things to say about life and death is the show Westworld.
Oh, really?
I love that show.
It was so good. And like, so, I mean, I don't think
about it without spoiling it.
But there is a line that's something like, I don't want to forget the passing of my son because that's what I have left of him. Yeah. I don't want to forget this pain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to not suffer because that's what I have. My suffering is what I have left, you know?
Yeah.
And I was just like, man, this show's really good. Yeah.
I love that show. I feel like a lot of people liked it and then stopped liking it. And I liked it and kept liking it and still
Who
do.
Who stopped? It's good.
No, yeah, mm-hmm. It's a great show.
It's fantastic.
I was on the edge of my seat the whole time. I loved it. All the twists and turns, they
and
got
I know
me.
Some people had to be sold, and I understand. Yeah. I understand there's plot holes. Okay, I get it.
Fine.
But it's fantastic.
It's really fun. It's a really fun show. You should watch it, Ben. You should do whatever you want. But
no. I haven't not watched it for any reason other than I haven't watched it.
Yeah.
But that's not true. I haven't watched it because people talked about it too much. And
then I
just wait until people are no longer talking about a thing.
Yeah.
And then I'll
understand.
And then I'll enjoy it. Or at least I'll enjoy it on my own terms. It seems like unless you watch something immediately when it comes out, that you're constantly just like responding to the world, as at least in regards to how they've appreciated this thing.
Yeah,
me, I don't give a shit. I'll watch it to watch it, but no, I'll never ever tweet about a show. And so like while people are tweeting about it, then it's just not for me.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
then they stop, and then it's for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I get it. I didn't wear high-waisted jeans until like 5 years after. It's like, okay, I guess this is what we're all doing.
Yeah.
That's the same thing, right?
Yeah.
Now it's all I wear.
I
don't think we're even wearing them anymore.
I know, but I think we're wearing them again now.
Yeah.
I've noticed a lot of them. I noticed a lot of high-waisted jeans. Because watching recently, well, we were both there. We were watching Maude auditions. We were part of the committee.
Uh-huh.
And I will not say anything about anything we saw in that room except for a lot of high-waisted jeans. And it made me go, huh, I guess they are back.
I mean,
a lot of
I don't
those
know
girls
if they
had
left.
High-waisted jeans.
I don't know if they
great.
Left. I think it's just the new reality until, you know, we're back into low rise.
Yeah. Yeah. Which I hope never happens.
Same here.
Ugh,
I have a long
nothing
torso.
Nothing looks worse than a low rise pair of jeans on me,
terrible.
At least.
Oh, yeah. No, but, the thing I like about high-waisted is it finally makes my body look like normal.
Yeah. Hmm. Me too. I feel like
I sat down in a lift the other day. And the guy like looked at me and the first thing he said was, "Whoa, are you 6 feet tall?"
Oh my gosh.
I'm I'm 5'6"
Yeah.
But he was just like, "You're so tall. Why are you so tall?" I'm like, I'm sitting and it makes me look taller. I am taller than all my friends when I sit, and then I'm shorter than everyone when
I
stand.
Ben is the same way. My husband Ben, not this Ben.
Got it.
He's an inch taller than me. I was about to say we're the same height, which is not true. He's a little bit taller than me. But sitting, he is taller and he has teeny tiny legs.
Weird, yeah.
And I have weird, disproportionately long legs and a little body.
I will
body.
Say when we were watching mod auditions, I was in a deep set couch and my legs stuck out straight. I look like a child, like ready for a play to begin.
So you think about death, you think about the logistics of death. What about illness? Like, do you find yourself to be a hypochondriac or?
No, I think I might be the opposite. I think everything's going to be okay.
You're an optimist.
Like, what is the opposite of hypochondriac? Like,
normal person?
Normal person. Finally, normal. because my thought is that if I think of the sick, then I give it the power.
I think you're right about that.
And for me, I'm especially on hyper alert of it when I see it in myself, because I think I am more suggestible than the average person. And now I've put it on record for all to know. Yeah. I just think I'm very suggestible. I like to read a lot of stuff about how we're influenced, how we make choices and stuff like that, because I feel like I'm number one. Like, I could be you know how like only a certain population can be hypnotized?
Yeah. Yeah.
I feel like I'm like right there.
Really?
I've never been hypnotized unless I'm hypnotized.
Right.
But like, I feel myself to be a suggestible person.
Yeah.
And like, to the point where if someone's like, "Oh, you're not looking so good," I'm like, "Oh, maybe I'm not feeling so good."
Yeah. Oh, wow.
It's just so immediate. I work so hard to understand my own reality because I'm so easily influenced.
That's so interesting.
So it's like when it comes to being sick, if I think I might be, I feel like that thought is so powerful with me because I don't have a good sense of like strong reality that I'm like, get out, banish. I won't allow myself if I got the sniffles or whatever. I'm like, I'm fine. Like sometimes I even like do things where I'm like, I'll go on a run. That sick people don't go on runs. Healthy people do.
Yeah.
I will run. There's definitely enough studies to back up the link between you know body and brain.
Yeah.
Oh, have you guys read this book called Cure?
No. I haven't. Have you?
I don't remember who the author is. I was just compelled to buy this book because of like some radio interview.
Yeah.
And it's about it talks a lot about the placebo effect.
Ooh.
And through this book, there is apparently companies that sell placebos.
Yeah, yeah. We've talked about that on this podcast for sure. Yeah, I guess that would be the opposite of kind of what you were talking about, that like we believe that these little sugar pills are going to fix us. It's sort of what you're kind of saying is that I believe that I can be cured, you know, that like, and then the opposite would be that if you believe that there's this sickness inside of you, you can at least manifest the symptoms of sickness, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that's so much of what they are is just the symptoms themselves.
I just thought it was so fascinating that people were buying a placebo knowing it was a placebo.
Yeah.
And still being like, yeah,
oh, they
it works.
Know it. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah,
okay.
That's, this is such a cool, I'm so excited to plug this book that I have no connection to.
Zig just pulled it up.
Who wrote it? Joe Marchant. Yeah,
Joe
I don't know
Marchant.
If I'm saying that right.
Cure, a journey into the science of mind over body.
I just thought it was so cool. And it talks about physical ailments and physical states of being connected with our mental state of being.
Oh, interesting. Did you notice anything that you were like, oh, I totally do that or I totally relate to that?
I think also I'm a big fan of, what's his name? Darren Brown, I think, who is a British skeptic and hypnotist.
Okay. Ooh.
Like the BBC, like just gives him all the shows. He's got all the shows, but like America, they're not on America TV for as much as I could tell. Oh yeah. Am I right? Darren Brown? Okay. But like he does a whole thing where one of his specials is where he cures everybody of smoking, and a part of it is like injections and stuff. It's all placebo, but a lot of people stop. They're like, it worked. I'm not smoking anymore. And so it has like these real life, results.
Yeah.
it's not like when they're told, oh, well, it was just a farce.
Yeah.
You know, people are like, oh, well, now I'm smoking again. It's like, well, I guess, well, I'm cured. So
yeah,
whatever. Some people, it doesn't work for because
your brain is crazy powerful.
It's powerful.
Yeah.
So it's just like, it's not like, oh yeah, I do this specific thing, but it's just like everything. I was like, yeah, probably.
Yeah.
You know, if it were me, probably.
Yeah.
If it were me, yes.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Do you now, Ben? Mm-hmm. So I'm curious. So I feel similarly where I'll be like, I don't feel so good. And then it'll make me feel bad. Mm-hmm. But I feel like you are different, right? Do you think you trick yourself into thinking you're sick? Or because I feel like we have like different brands of hypochondria. Well, I trick myself into thinking I'm sick, and you are more often actually sick responding to actual symptoms that inspire fear in you. But like, how do you feel like your mind and body what do you feel like their relationship is?
Probably what you said is accurate. I don't think I'm if I think I'm sick, I probably am sick. It's just not as bad as I think it is. And then I just get like the thing where with like each passing day that I stay sick, I become more and more convinced that like that if this was a small thing, my body would have fought it off by now. So one of the things we talked about today is that because of all this like this rain, because it's been a different sort of like climate in Los Angeles lately, a lot of us are having like weird sort of allergic reactions or allergic reactions that are maybe more consistent with, you know, Madeline's from the East Coast, I'm from the Midwest. So we're kind of having more hay fever like symptoms.
Yeah.
But when you're removed from an environment where hay fever is common, when you do get it, it's suddenly like, oh, no, this is what sick feels like. And you realize that like allergies and sickness are not all that different in the way that they manifest themselves in your body. So then when I don't get better immediately, this is one of the things we talked about at the live show. The two things that happen are, one, I think that this is tragic and that like I have to go, I have to see not only a doctor, but like an oncologist. That, like, I have to figure out what cancer I have. And then two, I become terrified that there'll be no one to take care of me. And this is the thing I mentioned, that I sign up for Tinder. And then a few days later, it goes away, as these things are wont to do, you know, because it turned out it was just like a head cold or something like that. And then I just quit Tinder immediately.
Do you go on the dates you set up? Or
I went on one date once, and it was such a disaster that I stopped setting up the dates. I just wanted the conversations. I needed to know.
And was the date that you went on inspired by you thinking that you need a life partner to be there for? Wow.
Yeah. And she was like so nice. Like she offered to like she probably would have. She offered to like we'd never met, and she offered to like bring food and medicine to my home. She was a great person.
Yeah,
It just turned out that this is the thing I mentioned, is that I didn't get sick. I got sick and then I didn't get healthy quick enough. And so we had to postpone the date. And by the time we actually went on the date, we had had so many conversations that there was nothing to talk about on the date. And then it was sort of like we weren't feeling each other any longer. And plus, I was better. And like once I'm better, I'm very self-involved. It's just a reality, like not in a way that's even like
gosh.
Like I don't think there's anything wrong with it. It's just like I think about. You know, I have no obligation to anyone else. I just so I was back to my life. I was like, I don't have time for these. I don't have time to throw emojis back and forth.
So it's like getting sick, like really, like gives a boost to your love life.
Well, I guess
like it gets you going.
It makes me think that I should boost my love life, and then I get better, and then I'm like,
and then you're back to single to mingle, but not literally not mingling.
Right? Yeah. Yeah, single to angle.
To angle.
Yeah. So. But
that's fascinating. Wow. Yeah.
How do you act when you get sick?
Yeah.
Oh, I pity myself.
Me too.
I'm like, oh gosh, it's so hard. And I can't believe I did, like, I blame myself, which is like a weird
thing. Me too. We were just talking about this on our last episode. I I'm filled with self-judgment and I really beat myself up when I get sick.
Like you're like you just at that when you're sick, you just need some soup and a friend.
Yeah.
And you can get yourself soup and you won't be a friend to yourself. Like you
gotta at least be your own friend.
You have to be your own friend because I mean I live alone and man, you don't know how single you are.
Yeah,
like when until you get sick and then soup doesn't happen in front of you.
Yeah.
Like it's just like I have to get my own soup and I have to know what this is when I collect.
Yeah.
I know. Tinder.
Oh no. Oh, my future. I got a flash of it.
You feel much worse after you've you kind of bait someone into thinking that you want to fall in love with them when in reality you just want soup. So I don't recommend going on Tinder when you're
a sick Tinder.
Yeah, they should.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's a terrible idea. I don't think the Center for Disease Control is going to be for that.
Nah, any startup people listening, Sick Tinder, you want to invest?
Hashtag Sick Tinder.
I highly don't recommend. Sick something.
Sick Tinder.
Sick Tinder.
Let's see.
Blaming yourself. There's something, I don't know.
Oh, were you going to say?
I think I'm going to be another fun thing that I do when I'm sick. I think I'm going to be a superhuman. I'm like, I'm finally sick. I'm off the grid. I can read 15 books.
Like,
I'll finally, like, I can't do anything else. My legs aren't compelled to move, so I'll write poetry. And like, and then of course, like, because you're sick.
Yeah.
Like, and you don't feel good.
Right.
You're in pain and you're just sleeping most of the time. So I'll like get through half of chapter one of like David Sedaris's Naked or something like that and wake up when it's dark and I'm sweating and I'm like, why? I failed at being sick. It's really, I put myself through quite an emotional gauntlet that I will never achieve.
you do have quite a spectrum of like failure and great success while you're sick that does feel very unachievable.
Ben, my husband Ben, again, just to make the distinction, he was recently sick and he described a fever dream that he had that felt like the perfect embodiment of how you feel when you're sick. He just kept having this fever dream over and over again that he had to build a whole house but only had one brick.
Oh my gosh.
And that feels somehow just like exactly how being sick feels, where you're like, I'm going to get so much done. I'm going to watch all those shows I was supposed to watch to teach me how to write a show.
And you literally have one brick.
Yeah. You just keep you like putting a brick all around.
Like, you would be in a better shape if you had a palm frond. Like,
do we do a hat of hypochondria?
Yeah.
So, Leland, we got this hat here. It's full of random questions pertaining to health and hypochondria. And why don't we answer one of those?
All right. Pulling out one. Nice. It is... When was the last time you cried and why?
Oh, yeah, that's a heavy one.
Yeah.
God, I feel like I'm like always crying. Yeah. That's not true. I'm always crying somewhat.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
What does that mean? The
like,
somewhat.
Like, I'll see a commercial that I'm like, it was beautiful.
Yeah.
Like, you know, or I'll think about something lovely and the memory will make me cry.
Can you cry right now? Like, can you narrate a thought for us and make yourself cry?
No.
I really wanted to take this
put
on.
You on the spot. I really wanted to take this on because sometimes I can cry on command.
Yes, yeah.
To plug my show again.
Oh, do you cry in your show?
Yeah. There is one or two moments where it is appropriate to have a tear or two. And it was like... I never asked for the stuff that makes you cry. I was like, I really want to be able to... I just hate it when it doesn't match. It really bothers me when I watch TV shows and it's like the person's like, "What?" and like dry eyes and you like and it cuts back and they're like, "Who's your guy?" And they're like, obviously, like because this it's like whatever menthol or whatever
it's like
they
a
give
stick
you.
Or something
it's a
they
stick
rub on your face.
And it's like irritating and so like their face is twitching and you're like, "Obviously, this is not, you know." But like There's like one scene in particular where, and what was funny is that the imaginary circumstances gave so much more to me than anything I think I could have thought.
Oh.
Like, I just, it was the, because there was like a scene later where like it called for a great deal of emotion,
yeah,
like later in the season. And like it was a lot more challenging, you know, like,
yeah,
I got there, but it was just like a lot more challenging.
Yeah.
But the first scene that I had to do, where I had, yeah, to bring a lot, was just kind of, it was really just being like imagining,
yeah,
this world, this,
yeah, yeah,
the world that I was playing rather,
yeah,
than,
yeah,
conjuring up from, you know, a world that I've actually lived.
Yeah.
Seems, which sounds more authentic. I mean, that you were crying for your character's life as opposed,
maybe,
to your life.
Yeah. It makes me sound like nothing's happened to me. Well, it's like I've had a very boring and happy life.
I think it was interesting that like the two examples that you went to about crying were both happy tears. That, like,
yeah,
you know, that it sounds like maybe you do cry more from beauty.
I would say I cry more like casually from happy things.
Yeah.
Let's see.
It'd be weird if you were just like bawled extensively.
There was a book I read that made
happiness.
Me cry.
Ooh.
It really took a number on me. It was a book called A Little Life.
Yes.
Did you read
That's
it?
That's making everybody cry.
Oh my.
It's on my bookshelf to read next. People keep telling me how that book.
It is so well written. It's,
yeah,
very masochistic. Like, you feel sick after reading it. But I mean, it's an testament to how good that writing is, because this author creates these characters that are so, they're so real that you think that they're your friends. You know, you know them better than you know yourself.
Oh,
like, because he just gets into so much detail,
yeah,
and then he starts doing bad things to them, or like, or
it's
some.
Do you know a lady wrote it?
I did not know that.
Yeah, isn't that
crazy? I did not know that.
I just bring it up because it seems
because
like a book that a dude would have written, and it's all about dudes.
Because it's about
but
men.
I think a Japanese lady wrote it.
I couldn't tell gender from the,
yeah,
the title of the author.
Yeah.
That is so cool.
It's not related, but I think,
oh,
kind of interesting.
The new, mm-hmm, The Outsiders. Yeah. But yeah, wow, that is really cool.
Yeah.
I like that. But like, it's so masochistic reading it, because it's just like you feel for them and you're like angry at the author and being like, why are you doing this to my friends?
Oh my God.
And that book made me cry.
Mm.
And then the time I cried before that wasn't in an imaginary way, is one of my friends passed away last year. I think a lot of our friends passed away last year. It was, I mean, if I'm not crying at that, then I am soulless.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But yeah. So
when's the last time you cried, Ben?
I don't know. probably not, like, I don't think it was super long ago.
Yeah.
But I don't, I've been having more of the kind that Leland described in her examples, the like, something happens in like a commercial and you get like,
yeah,
a little teary. But like, I actually did have one where like, where like I found out a friend died and I didn't cry.
Yeah.
And to this day I wrestle with why,
yeah,
why I didn't. To this day never cried about it. I missed the person,
yeah,
and it was very sad,
yeah,
but it didn't happen.
Yeah.
And I think to some extent it was because I put such expectations on myself,
yeah,
that I would cry then, that I've just, I've always been somebody who defied authority, even,
yeah,
when it's my own authority. And I think that was just like a moment of like, you're supposed to cry here right now. And so my body just decided it was going to be impossible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's happened to me too.
Yeah.
Or if a lot of people are super,
yeah,
sad,
yeah,
like, I think like it kind of like,
yeah,
like there's something subconscious that balances it, where it's like, well, there's too much sadness. So
yeah. I think I do tend to feel like I have to be the strong one. And then a few minutes later, I'll be like, why? No one has to be the strong one, too. Why would it have to be you?
You're
a weak human being.
Oh, good. What about you, Madeline?
I was watching one of the, so I cried in like the way you described, like at a, you know, like from just being moved by something, by one of the like Oscar animated shorts fucking wrecked me. It was embarrassing how much I cried at this. It was, we were like at, a friend's house and he was like showing us some of the Oscar animated shorts, and it is a super simple short. It's called Pearl. I think you can watch it. I think it's like online. It's actually, I didn't realize it's like in 3D. So if you have like probably Google Cardboard or something, you can like watch it in 3D, which is kind of cool, but not related to why it made me cry. But it's like all, it takes place in a car.
Because it was 3D.
I cried because, wow, technology is, is so incredible.
You were inside a cartoon.
Yeah. it's like about... it's like all takes place inside a car, and it like starts with like, it's about this dad who's like kind of living out of his car. He's like a musician, and like he has like a little daughter who's like, he's like taken on the road with him, and like he's just like kind of a cool, you know, sort of like hippie guitar dad. And the whole thing, it's just, it's like a song. It's like, you know, that you assume he's singing, and then it like, then he realizes that like he needs to like, you know, he like get his shit together because he has a kid, you know, and so he like buys a house, and then it goes through his daughter growing up, and like she, it's gonna make me cry. This is insane, but like so, it's, and like you see like her kind of getting older, and like she starts a band with her friends, and like you know, and you see like her dad getting mad at her for like staying out too. You know, you kind of like see these snapshots of their life, and you know, he gets a haircut and he looks like a regular dad, and then like. And then the song turns, and then like she's the song, it's like her, she's singing the song, you know? And, and then she gets to be like a very successful musician, you see? And then she finds this old car, which was like junked, I guess, like that the whole thing takes place in. And she like brings her dad to like one of her concerts. And it's so sweet because he's like, he's crying. I was truly so embarrassed, but like, he's like so happy. You guys, this is, I'm fully humiliated.
I gotta watch this short.
It probably won't make, it's like stupid, it makes me cry. But like, it's just because like, he gets to like live out this dream that he thought he gave up, like through his daughter, and he's so proud. And that made me cry. It is so manipulative.
Do you have a last movie that got you like that?
Let's see. I watched,
or TV.
You know, I watched Manchester by the Sea. Did not do anything for me.
This is it because the star of it is a sexual assaulter?
That's not funny. Yeah. It was before I knew about all that stuff. It was just like something felt like the movie was like watching me being like, are you crying yet? I bet you'll cry. And I was like, no movie, I won't cry. Let's see.
It's hard when they do, when they like, they keep telling us that Moonlight and Manchester by the Sea are going to make us cry really hard. And it's a lot of stress to go into those movies. And it's like, what if it doesn't affect me? Am I dead inside? And I don't want to find out. I need to wait until I forget that like, that Moonlight is supposed to be the saddest or not even necessarily the saddest, but that it's supposed to like, draw this stuff out of you, and then it will draw it out of me because I won't be thinking so hard about it. But I guess I do spend a lot of time thinking about whether or not I'm emotionally robotic.
Well, feeling like you're supposed to cry, it's like, because I feel like you also, it's easier to, like, I feel like when it, you have to be in some sort of state of being relaxed to like be kind of so caught off guard emotionally that like you cry, and I feel like when you're like, I guess I, what's the part that I'm supposed to cry
supposed
at?
To?
If I don't cry at this, am I a monster?
Yeah, your tear ducts are like, they can't release.
Yeah.
But I'm so excited when I hear that someone else, like unprompted, had a giant emotional reaction to the similar thing. That I just, like when we talked, we both talked about that Madeline and I were both very affected by this little song part in Moana where they're singing to this like this monster thing.
So
they have stolen the heart from inside you, but this does not define you.
It was just like,
it was like very emotional because it, for me, it was like, it felt very much like the curse of Hollywood, that like you come here with these great aspirations and the desire to do something that's like very pure of heart. And then over the course of your stay here, they'll kind of, they can steal that from you a little bit, like that feeling, the pureness of it. And instead it becomes like, so-and-so got a job and I didn't get a job and I'm bitter about these things. And it's like, they've stolen the heart from inside, but this is not who you are. You are the person who arrived here with those ambitions, those pure of heart ambitions, not the person who had that taken from him or her. So yeah, I cried when that happened.
Really?
I cried. I would say the movie that I had the reaction similar to yours was Inside Out. That would say I bawled for the bawled for the whole third act.
Wow, that is fascinating. So Inside you're not a robot because you're crying at these children's films.
But I, my fear is always is that I don't know how to exist in the world, that I can in the present moment that I'm not capable of feeling, that like I'm only capable
that's
of being
so
manipulated.
Crazy normal. Mm. I see what you mean.
That like somebody, they have to do the thing that like is going to make everyone cry for me. And I don't believe it to actually be true. It's just my fear that I don't fit in the world. It's a manifestation
I think it's like such a human thing to not like we were saying, it's like when we have this expectation of like we understand this to be the context where we cry at and that causes us not to cry. And also I'm guessing here, but like I feel like that's something that's like characteristically male.
Yeah, probably. Mm-hmm.
Where it's like it's not like men don't feel or men feel less than women. It's just that like women are like on average like fluid, you know, like we're fluid and it's like and you know, known for being empathetic and stuff like that. And so if there's crying, then we connect easily. But I've talked to like a couple of people, like one of our friends whose father passed away the next day he went to work.
Yeah.
And everybody's like, why are you here? And he's like, well, I don't know where else I'd be.
Yeah.
Right. You know,
and
my dad's definitely like that, you know, where it's like, if he's dealing with something very sad, he's not sad when he's talking about it. Mm. My grandma passed away last 2 years now. And it was surprising, you know, I mean, she was a grandma and she was grandma age, but it was surprising because she was a very healthy lady.
Oh.
And my dad just sent out an email. Like he didn't even call, you know, he sent out an email and he's like, okay, this is what happened. It was very without emotion. Mm. It was just like, these are the facts.
Yeah.
This is what I know. And so then I called my dad and my dad didn't have any emotion. He was obviously affected, but I could tell that he was probably going to have his thing on his own time.
Right.
Yeah. You know, and it affected him it's still affecting him, you know, because death is permanent.
Yeah.
And that's something that I've learned too, is that like, for some reason, I thought the only, like, this is an ongoing revelation.
Yeah.
When I was younger, I thought the only thing that really matters is traumatic deaths when you're a child, you know? And then when I was a little bit older, it's like, oh, if you're young, you know, or if it's an unexpected, then it's traumatic, you know? Or it's like, it's different. Like, that type of death is different. And it is, but I didn't understand how similar all death is.
Yeah.
And I didn't understand, like, I'm, like, understanding more and more, you know, as I'm experiencing it in some ways for myself and then like watching other people experience very heavy stuff as well. It's just like, oh, you never, like, it's never easy.
Yeah.
You know, it's different, but it's never easy, and you can be old enough, you know. And also I thought age was like such a determining factor of how sad you were going to be.
Yeah.
And like, I'm learning, oh, it's not age, it's closeness. No.
Yes.
Like, you could be 105 and if like, this is the person who you love so much, when they die, it can be traumatic.
Yeah.
You know, but if like, for some of my friends who've talked about like a, you know, a distant father or a distant mother, you know, and them getting the news, and like, it's very upsetting, you know, but in a, like a coworker was just like, this happened and, I don't care.
Yeah.
Like, and it like surprised him.
Yeah.
So that's always.
Yeah.
So crazy.
Yeah.
How do we get talking about this? Sorry.
I mean,
children's movies.
This is what our podcast
is. The thought is that you don't have anything to worry about. I feel like what you're describing is normal human being.
Yeah.
Like, it's just like in, like, it's it seems characteristic for gender, you know?
Mm-hmm. And character. I mean, yeah. And I think very specifically the fact that you're wondering, should I cry? I bet is one of the things directly making you not cry.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think a lot of us spend a decent portion of our time feeling guilty in one way or another. Yeah. And I think that's an extension of that, is just feeling
all
like
that like, other 95%.
Yeah.
5% on death and 95% on guilt.
Yep.
And that's like, the whole pie.
Yep.
It's bad enough that there's nothing that we can do to prevent the death itself, but to then not feel like we're giving enough of our emotional self to it. If just another, it's more guilt. It's just that like, that no matter what I do, I'm not going to be good enough. And really what I'm saying is that there's nothing that I can do to stop this like inevitable sadness that is death, you know, like I've always been the person who wanted to come up with a cure for the incurable, and I want it for other people. I want to be able to say, probably in like a little bit of a hero sense, but mostly just like that we've all been around people that were dealing with something that was unfathomable, and all in your head, you're just like, man, I wish there was anything I could do to take away your pain.
Yeah.
And then there isn't.
Yeah.
And then if come to feel a little bit bad about it, that like it, whether, and deep down you know that like that that's just a human thing, this is, it's not on Ben, but I wish I could do it. I wish I could make it so that, for two reasons. One, I wish I could make it so that no one felt any sadness, because that's just a thing that we all sort of wish. Yeah. But also, isn't that kind of what comedy is? Like, you try to come up with a thing that's gonna like kind of take away the pain a little bit, or whatever. Exists in the world, you sort of like, Let's find a way to laugh through things.
Yeah,
it feels like a failure on so many levels, but it's not. I know that it's not, but it feels like it at the time.
Yeah. It's a unique type of frustration to like see just like wretched sadness and be very close to it and just be like, I can't.
Yeah.
I can't punch it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Like I can't
grab it and I can't tear it, you know, and I can't like keep you safe, you know?
Yeah.
And I can't convince this thing that it's not sad. Like this sad thing that happened, I couldn't tell you something. I couldn't give you words that would make you realize, oh no, like that's a part of human existence.
Oh,
so
the
I guess
words
that's,
too.
Yeah, there's
it's
no
just
words.
Like, What kind of stupid words, like, and you're mad at yourself that you don't know enough words, you know, that you're just like, oh gosh, to be able to say, could I say something that could at least not make it not happen, but at least like not make it worse, and everything makes it worse.
It makes it worse. Yeah. So you either say something and you make it worse, or you choose not to, which is, you know, typically kind of the smart move, at least not to try to say something that's going to fix it. But then you kind of feel bad for not having said anything either. It's sort of not, there's no win.
And what like something that I'm learning too, and it seems to be reinforced by blogs and stuff about grief or whatever, is it's not important what you say as much as it's just like physical presence,
being
you know?
Aware.
And so it's just like, oh God, I'm not enough physical presence.
You
know,
like,
but
you're 6 feet tall.
Yeah, you're really cool.
Only when I sit down.
So just sit with them.
Yeah.
That's what Shiva is.
Literally.
Sitting Shiva.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's smart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bring food and then hang out. That's kind of.
Yeah.
And it's the food part's just because when people are grieving, they forget to sustain themselves.
Yeah.
So we bring them food and then we sit by their side for the exactly 1 week it takes to grieve.
Yeah.
And then we.
Yeah. And then everything goes back to
and
normal.
Everything's back to normal. Yeah.
Isn't there like a
TV comes
a
back
Buddhist. A Buddhist practice of like 90 days or something like that?
Oh.
And then you and you put something in a river?
I mean, I've never heard that, but it sounds right.
Yeah. Zig, can you check if there's a Buddhist thing about a river?
Yeah, can you Google?
Oh, jeez. I think I'm just like putting things together. Like,
no, they're good.
I think I read a poem about Buddhism and a river.
Maybe but we something were very about 90 sick days.
Oh, no, I watched The Ring and I turned 7 into 90. And that's actually, like, I don't know. But yeah, it's just so smart that, like, that a lot of religions have, like, a religious practice, which is just like, don't let that person do anything, and it's okay if you don't. Is there? I did it.
Did it. You've been right about all of these,
I know.
Leon.
Cool.
Don't doubt yourself.
Well, it's like...
You're a queen of grief.
Queen of grief?
Yeah, you're not really, but that is what I said.
Queen of self-doubt.
Yeah.
I will champion that.
Leland, before we go, do you want to plug anything?
Yes, I do. I'd like to plug Disney's new show, original series, Andy Mack. It premieres on March 10th. The first episode is on YouTube, and then it's on the Disney Channel April 7th. And awesome. I'm really excited about the show because it's like different. Yeah. It's like it's for kids, but adults will like it too. Nice. I think so.
Yeah. I'm so excited to watch.
Me too.
It's going to be great. March 10th, Andy yeah. Mack, check it
on
out on
YouTube.
YouTube.
On YouTube.
Yeah.
And in the meantime, check out Leland and Wilder videos on Funny or Die.
Yes, yeah. They're there. Oh, and my name's spelled L-I-L-A-N.
Oh. Yeah. Right.
So you can search for it.
That's right. Your friend Leland on Twitter and Instagram.
Yes.
Great.
Your awesome. Friend Leland.
Yeah. Well, Leland. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Oh. It was a lot of fun.
This was cathartic.
Yeah, it was. It was a real yeah. feeler. This was a
yeah.
good one. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a real feeler.
We
yeah.
like good. We like a. We like one that. That pulls at you a little bit. Yeah. Makes oh. you feel stuff.
Yeah.
Good to be here for it.
And yes. coming right up, we got a phone call with your girl, Dr. Laura.
Yeah.
Guys. I'm really excited because we have the long-awaited return of one of the very favorite guests that this podcast has had. I've had several requests for her to come back. We're here with Dr. Laura Malone, but as we call her on the podcast, just Dr. Laura. And she is back to give us more of her incredible knowledge of real medical things and answer some of our questions. Hey, Laura.
Hi, thanks for having me back.
Yeah, how have you been? It's been months. What have you been doing?
Any medicine?
You know, just talking to people about real medical things as opposed to what I talk.
Okay. Interesting.
Great, not mincing any words. Yeah. I love it.
I guess all the people that we saved from grill brush accidents mean nothing to you, but
oh yeah, this is actually since we talked to you last year, you had a whole summer of being a doctor. Did anybody come mm-hmm. in having swallowed a grill brush?
Yeah.
No one did show up with that, I'm mm-hmm. happy to say.
I'm less happy, but I guess it's a good thing, all things considered.
So, Laura, you're in the middle of a 24-hour shift. Is that correct?
Yeah.
What? So you're helping. What does that even look like?
Well, so my shift is starting a little bit later, but we had an activity during the day that I had to be here for. So I'm off for about an hour or so, a little break. So I figured I'd call in and see what advice or things we could talk about.
Well, I have some questions sort of because you're in the middle of a day when you're going to just work for 24 hours straight. I'm curious about your opinions of about whether you can die from sleep deprivation. Can you die from not? Because Ben is very sleepy today.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Could I die?
Can you die from not getting enough sleep?
I mean, I've never really seen that happen because I think you end up just sort of passing out eventually.
but
it's probably not healthy to be depriving yourself of sleep on a regular basis. So I
found an article that said that there was in the 80s, they did an experiment on rats. And mm-hmm. after 32 days of not having any sleep, all of the rats were dead. Would that happen to people?
I don't know. I don't know anyone that's actually stayed awake for 32 days straight.
Sure, but you're a doctor, so if I'm your patient and I come
yeah,
in and
I
I'm
mean,
like,
probably
I'm going to
stay up,
I'm doing a waking marathon as a yeah. protest. I'm never going to go. I'm on a sleep strike. What would you tell me?
I mean, I think eventually you might have problems and die from it, but I think that your body would probably just take over and you would fall asleep at the littlest thing.
Interesting.
And so you wouldn't get to that point, as opposed to the rats that they can continue to force to stay awake. I guess
how do you force a rat to stay awake?
I don't know. You read the study. What did they do?
It didn't really
You think you're just like poking it? You think they just like poke the rat? Like, wake up. When you did finally die from sleep deprivation, like, what would actually have killed you?
Oh, I don't know. I wonder if maybe you would just have, like, seizures at a certain point from it. But I don't know what you would actually die from. Again, the study probably that Madeline had read probably lends more information to this, because I've never actually had a patient that stays awake that long. So.
Well, okay, so I have another kind. It's sort of a sleep adjacent question. I was browsing CNN Health, which I like to do sometimes before our calls to see if there's anything I want to ask you about. And I discovered an article about a woman who recently she was sleeping and then she woke up feeling kind of like funny, like there was a pain inside her head. It was like sort of like itchy. And she went to the doctor and she had a live cockroach inside her skull. It had crawled inside her skull. They did a skull X-ray and found a cockroach, and it had crawled up through her nose and it burrowed in there so deep. It was living its life, and they had to, it took them like a very long time to get it out because they had to like suck it out. have you ever encountered anything like that? And should I be scared? How scared should I be that that will happen to me?
I've never encountered anything like that. I think that sounds totally gross and disgusting. And so I hope that that never happens to you.
could it, does it, how, like, have you ever had anybody with something stuck in their head?
I mean, not like a bug that crawls inside of their brain. No.
What's the coolest thing you've found in someone's head?
Why? I mean, CNN Health reports these types of things.
Yes.
This is where you get the information
Sorry,
from. It's
TMZ
not on
Health.
Like crazystories.com or something.
Where do you get your health news?
I mean, I live health news, so I tend not to actually like search things.
But if you want to know, like, what are the interesting trends? How do you beat belly fat? Where do you go?
I mean, I go to like more medical journals if it's something regarding actual patients, but I mean, I don't tend to just search the internet for trends. I sort of find that out from practice, what's actually happening.
So you guys are not, when you guys are taking your break, you're not all in the break room chatting about what you read about on CNN Health or HuffPo. I looked at HuffPo Health.
You guys uploading images on the
Figure
1?
No, that's probably the last place that we go for any of our medical knowledge, and we really try and not talk about medical things when we're all just sort of sitting in the break room. So
really? What do you guys talk about?
Do you have like a comedy podcast?
I mean, some of us do have like real lives with friends and things like that. So
give me an example. So okay, I'm gonna pretend to be another doctor and we're in the break room. Can you give me an example of what you would talk about? Because in my mind, this is how it would talk about. This is how it would go.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Laura. How are you?
Good. How are you? Am I playing this role or are you just going to play
you're just
those
being
sides
you.
Of it?
You're just being you and I'm another one of your coworkers. What's the name of one of your coworkers?
Let's just say Kristen.
Okay. Hey, it's me, Kristen. How are you?
Good. How are you, Kristen?
I'm terrible. I have a headache and it started right in the middle of last night and it feels kind of itchy and weird, and I don't know what it is.
Are you worried that some sort of cockroach went into your brain?
Yes! How did you know?
I'm pretty sure that's not what happened.
but I tried everything else. I took an Advil. It starts.
Yeah. Normally, my other, like, medical friends wouldn't be looking at CNN Health for their, you know, medical information either. So I think that might be something only you do, Madeline, to prepare for the
I'm
segment.
I'm Kristen right now.
Okay.
I'm Dr. Kristen.
Kristen's
You're Dr.
A bad
Kristen.
Doctor.
Okay. Yeah, that's not how our conversations really go.
How do they go? Like, what you talk about, like?
Like the Super Bowl.
Oh,
you know,
like all the like the,
some of us
the
did watch the Super Bowl.
Did you talk about like CTE?
Yeah, you guys would probably talk about
CTE.
Isn't that when everybody's brain breaks?
Yeah, that's the one. That's the concussion thing. They they have broken brain from concussions. You guys should be talking about this when you're discussing the Super Bowl. Otherwise, it's like, you know, there are other people that could discuss the football side of it.
Yeah, I mean, for things like, you know, traumatic brain injuries, we'll talk about that. But that seems a little more reasonable than cockroaches crawling into your brain.
So you don't think that that's at all a legit fear?
I mean, fear? No, I don't think you have to worry about that happening.
You don't, but Why not?
Because, first of all, I mean, I don't even know if that was like a real story or not, or you're just like making it up.
Well, no, I'm not. If you go Google, if you go to, it was a headline yesterday. You can just, but also if you just go to cnn.com/2/8/health/live-cockroach-skull and, and you'll find the article.
Okay, I'll have to look that up later.
Look it up. I'm really curious what you think, because it, because there was a picture of the x-ray and everything. There was also a video of them pulling the cockroach out of her head, but I couldn't watch it.
Mm. Yeah, that's probably a good idea. I don't think I would want to watch that either. It sounds pretty disturbing.
But what if you had to do that? Would you, or would you say too gross?
I mean, I wouldn't be the one doing that. That would be probably an ENT doctor that would have to do that. So,
Seems above their pay grade.
Any advice for avoiding this kind of medical emergency? Like, what would you tell people who just hypothetically were legitimately scared this could happen? How can you prevent it?
Maybe having a exterminator come and then treat your house so that you don't have cockroaches in your house.
I mean, what if you, okay, what if you don't have cockroaches but are afraid of the rogue cockroach coming in and getting in that in your nose when you sleep?
I mean, maybe then you should just sleep with some of those like nose plug things.
Okay. Okay.
I don't recommend doing that, by the way. But well, if you're just forcing me to say something,
guys, you heard it
here first.
That's
what I will say.
Get an exterminator and just to be safe, plug up your nose while you sleep.
Plug all your holes.
I've heard they can crawl in your ears too, but that wasn't in this particular article.
Okay. I mean, it's probably more likely that they would like crawl in your mouth. But
Laura,
this is probably how it sounds when you guys were talking about football.
Laura, thank you so much. We're going to have you on. Oh, really quickly, actually, we have our guest with us. Leland, do you have any questions for Dr. Okay. Laura before we let her go save children?
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
Laura, can you hear Leland?
Can you hear me?
Just barely.
Okay, cool. How about now?
A little better now.
Okay, I'll be as close as possible. My question is, can you prevent your eyes from getting worse by, like, say you're nearsighted? If you spend a lot of time looking at faraway things, is there anything that you can do that's in your control to prevent your eyes from naturally losing their vision or having it get worse?
So, I mean, I think the best things are to, not read in the dark, try and limit screen time, things like that. But I've actually heard recently that even the whole thing with carrots and vitamin A is not proven to actually help improve.
Oh, that's interesting.
I would just try and limit other things that you're doing that can make your eyes worse. But I don't think looking at things far away.
Well, that's what, like, and the reason why I asked this, it just came to me because when I was a kid, my dad was like, don't sit too close to the TV. But also when you have a moment to look out at the landscape, let your eyes relax on it. And he had this whole thing of like, you know, so your eyes get used to seeing things close up and far away. But so I wanted to see if there was any validity to that.
Well, I mean, you don't want your eyes to be looking. That's what they think about, like, watching screens too often, just because your eyes aren't moving a whole lot through it. So, yeah, you don't want to, like, focus on one thing for too long. But so your dad was right with regards to that. But looking at things particularly far away isn't going to change it.
Good
but you
to
should
know.
Look at things of different depth and give your eyes breaks and things like that.
Okay, so just kind of vary up what I'm looking at it with a variety of distances as well.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Leland, that was a great question.
Thank you. It just came to me. I didn't even have them prepared. I didn't even know I was going to be getting the opportunity to talk to a real doctor.
I feel like it was not probably as relevant or helpful as
whether a cockroach
can crawl in your brain, but you know, it was good.
Definitely not as like with emotional suspense.
Well, Dr. Laura, thank you so much.
No problem.
Thank you.
Nice to meet you again.
We'll talk to you again soon.
Okay. Sounds good.
Okay. Good luck on the rest of your shift.
Thank you.
Bye.
This has been Definitely Dying. Thank you guys so much for listening.
Don't forget to rate and review us on iTunes, and you can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Definitely Dying.
Until next time, stay healthy.
This has been a UCB Comedy production. Check out our other shows on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network.